This morning's scripture reading will be coming from the book of James, chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. I'll be reading from the New King James Version. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. Whereas, you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Please be seated.
I'd like to take just a moment to introduce Brother Don Blackwell. Blackwell was born in Charleston, South Carolina, grew up attending the North Charleston congregation there, obeying the gospel in 1983. In 1991, he married Sherry, formerly Shepherd. Don and Sherry now have three children, Macy, who is married to Lee Rowland, Lauren, who is married to Casey Sella, and Brandon. I believe Brandon is in the school of preaching, if that's, I haven't talked to Brandon in a little while, but I was thinking he was at the Memphis School of Preaching now as a student, and so very proud of Brandon, the work that he is doing there, but I know that they are proud of their family. They have also one grandchild, Ellie Mae Rowland, and so I know they're very proud of their family. Don is a veteran of the United States Air Force, working in Air Force Intelligence as an imagery interpreter. I think I've said that right. In 1994, he separated from active duty and moved to Memphis, Tennessee to attend the Memphis School of Preaching. And upon his graduation, has done work in Alabama, North Carolina, South Carolina, Mississippi, South Haven, Mississippi, most recently and now at the Willow Avenue congregation in Cookeville, Tennessee. And so we are grateful for the work, certainly that Don has been involved in. But also want to make mention the fact that he is the executive director of the Gospel Broadcasting Network. And I mentioned this during the Bible class hour, but I want to mention it again to make sure that you are aware of that. And hopefully you will go and check out that good work, gbntv.org, as well as Brother Blackwell pointed out that you need to download the app. If you have a smartphone or a tablet of some sort, then you need to download their app. The GBN app, and there is a that is a great resource, as he mentioned, even for evangelistic efforts as well. Brother Don also serves as a one of the board of directors for the World Video Bible School, and so many of us for years have been acquainted with Brother Don through the World Video Bible School DVDs that were put out in most congregations, as well as a book that was put out by Brother Don, The Truth About Moral Issues. And in that book, he covers a wide variety of topics. I think the teenagers here have studied it in the past. And so I know that there's a great deal of work that has followed Brother Don and Sister Sherry through their efforts in preaching the gospel. But I'm thankful mostly that they're here with us this weekend and this week to preach the gospel to us. So without anything further from me, Brother Don Blackwell.
Good morning. It is so good to be here with you. I have been looking forward to this for some time, and it has finally arrived. It's good to see that there are people in the pews and that we're getting back to normal again. I'm so glad for that. It was mentioned that we have a granddaughter who is named Ellie Mae. She will be 2 years old in August, right? 2 years old in August. And when our daughter told us that they were going to name her Ellie Mae, I said, you know what everybody's going to think of when they hear Ellie Mae? And she said, what? And I said, the TV show? And she said, Andy Griffith? And I said, the Beverly Hillbillies. And she said, Dad, only old people will think of that. And so we have an Ellie Mae in the family. It was mentioned about the Gospel Broadcasting Network. I encourage you to download our app. GBN is carried on about 25 cable stations. We've got programs on Dish Network and DirecTV going into 40 million homes. We are getting heavy now on social media. Our Instagram crowd now is about 600,000 followers on Instagram. And we are putting material on Facebook. Our app is very, very good. We have an online Bible correspondence course that is self-grading that you can take online. You can take on the app, and you can direct people to that. All of the work that we do at GBN is supported by free will contributions. I say that everywhere I go because we have to beg for money to keep the work going. And I hate to say that, but in order to fund a work like we're doing, we have to have income to do that. If you would like to contribute to the work of GBN, talk to me and we could set you up on a regular debit. We can mail you an envelope. We can just about any way a person can contribute, we have that available to do. I'm going to tell you today about the accident that I was involved in a couple of years ago and why I am in a wheelchair. This is the first time that I have talked about it in a while, and so I'm not exactly sure how it's going to go for me to do this. Let's see. There we go. The last few times I have talked about it, it has really gotten me choked up. It has been a while. I am somewhat getting used to this new life that I'm in. Let's see. Did I not advance it there? I thought I advanced it. Go ahead and advance it to the first slide for me. I apparently don't know what I'm doing here. All right, there we go. So hopefully this will go smoothly. On May 5th, 2 years ago, we're coming up in about 3 weeks on the two-week anniversary of this accident. May the 5th of 2019, I started a gospel meeting in Salem, Virginia, at the Westside Church of Christ. You can see this is their auditorium. Brother Eddie Gilpin was the preacher there at the time. On May the 6th, which was the next day on a Monday, Brother Eddie and his wife invited us to come to their house. They have a farm of about 100 acres. They invited us to go and to have lunch with them. They told us that we were going to be going to a little cafe that's nearby, and we were expecting some sort of a restaurant. So we went and we talked for a while in their house, and they said, all right, let's go eat. We go outside and they invite us to get on the four-wheelers. And I thought, what in the world kind of restaurant are we going to on four-wheelers? But they got on one, and Sherry and I got on the one behind them, and we set out to follow them. And they took us to a little area. Go to the next slide, please. They took us to a little area under the trees. Let's see here. All right, there we go. Under the trees, and they had a meal, a good spread set up, a picnic. That was the restaurant. It was there on their property. This was a picture that was taken. And we had a nice visit. We had a great lunch, beautiful area. It was just, you couldn't have asked for a better day than that. When we got through eating, they asked if we would like to tour the property. And we said that would be a great thing to do. And so here is a shot of the property. When we got there, we got up to the top of the hill, and I got out my iPhone, and I took this picture, and you could see that it's just an absolutely beautiful place. Brother Eddie said, would you like me to take a picture of you and Sherry? And I said, absolutely. And so he took this picture literally right before the accident occurred. We started down the hill, and I don't know what happened. Somewhere as we were going down the hill through this hay field, apparently we hit something. I went blank and was unconscious, and I don't remember anything from the time I started down the hill until I woke up in the hospital a day or two later. But I'm going to tell you what I was told. Apparently we hit something and the four-wheeler we were on flipped, they say, four times. Sherry flew off one direction, and I flew off another. When I hit the ground, I broke my back, and I severed or at least mangled my spinal cord. Brother Eddie heard it, and he turned around, and he came to me. When he got to me, I was unconscious, and he thought I was dead. Sherry had flown a good distance away, but she said that she could hear Eddie calling my name, but I wasn't responding. She said that she was praying to God that I wasn't dead and that I wasn't brain damaged. After a bit, I came to, I woke up. I still don't remember this, but Eddie said that I was saying I can't feel my legs. Sherry said that she could hear me in the distance, but I was groaning. My speech was slurred. I was hurting. She said she could hear me saying, I can't breathe. Please move me. I can't breathe. Please lift me. But of course he wouldn't do that because he was afraid what would happen to me. They called an ambulance. When the ambulance got there, the ambulance realized very quickly that it was beyond their abilities. And so they called in a medevac helicopter. And they flew me to the hospital in Roanoke, Virginia. When they got there, they determined that I had a broken back, a broken sternum, a cracked C1 vertebrae at the base of my skull, and I had severed my spinal cord. In fact, here is a shot of the x-ray of my back. You can see my spinal cord is actually, or my back bone is actually, when I say broken in half, it literally was broken in half. They put it back together with metal rods, and I have pins in my back that hold my back together, but of course they can't fix the spinal cord. When I woke up from this a day or two later, the doctor woke me, and I was very confused. I said, where am I? What am I doing here? And he said, you're in the hospital. And I said, why? And he said, you had an accident on the four-wheeler. And I remembered being on a four-wheeler, but I didn't remember anything else. After a minute, it occurred to me, I can't feel my body. I can't move my legs. And I mentioned that to him, and I said, will I walk again? And he said, probably not. He said, I'm not God, but probably not. I thought it was a dream. You ever have one of those dreams where something terrible is happening and you wake up later and you're okay? And I thought it was a dream. So I went back to sleep. I was kind of out of it anyway. I woke up a little later and the same thing. And this kept happening for 24 hours and until I finally woke up and I realized that this was real. It was the most devastating thing. I can't even begin to tell you how devastating it is to learn something like that. And I didn't even realize what all that entailed at the time. I wondered, can I preach again? Can I work again? What is this going to do to my life? Am I going to be stuck in my house? I didn't know what was going to be happening from this point forward. A few days later, they airlifted me to the Shepherd Center in Atlanta, Georgia, and I spent the next 2.5 months in rehabilitation until I was released in August of 2019. Now, for the sake of time, what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to stop, and I'm going to make 3 points. I'm going to make some application from the experience that I have endured from the accident and since then. First, I'm going to make some observation/application. Secondly, I'm going to talk about some benefits of suffering, specifically my suffering. And then thirdly, I'm going to ask the question, where do I go from here? Where have I gone from here? Here is point number one. In fact, before I do, here is a shot of me when I was in the hospital. This is, I don't remember if this was in, I guess this was in Roanoke immediately afterwards. I don't know if I was still unconscious here, but this may have been the next picture taken on my cell phone after the one that we took on the four-wheelers. But you can see I was in pretty bad shape at that time. I want to first make some observations, some applications about this particular incident. Number one, I'm going to talk about suffering. When I first hit the ground and I was lying there with my spinal cord mangled or broken, I was in pain. I was begging for help. I don't remember any of this, but later in the hospital, I do remember this. I remember that the pain was so intense that I was begging the nurse, please help me. And she said, there's nothing I can do. I begged her, please give me morphine. Please make it stop. Eventually, I broke into tears begging for help, and they gave me something, and they got it under control. But I got to thinking about this. I want you to imagine a person who dies and goes to hell, and they lift up their eyes in torment. the pain that they will be enduring is a million times greater. And that person is going to beg for help. But they're not going to get any. They're not going to get relief. In addition to the pain, there will be darkness. In addition to the darkness and the pain, there will be fire. And in addition to that, it will never stop. Revelation 14 and verse 11 says that the smoke of their torment ascends up forever and ever, and they have no rest day or night. Brethren, when you have gone through that kind of pain, and maybe some of you have, you can't bear the thought of that sort of thing happening forever and ever, and it makes you think, I will do whatever I have to make my life right because I don't want to go through that. Here's the next thing, the next observation I want to make. You don't know what tomorrow holds. James 4:14 says, whereas you do not know what will happen on tomorrow, for what is life? It's even a vapor that appears for a little time and vanishes away. On that particular day, we were having a great, beautiful day. And suddenly, out of nowhere, this happened to me, and I nearly died. It will forever be impressed upon me how real the reality is that all of the sudden, without warning, this could happen. We're riding along and bam, I nearly died. You could leave here today and you're riding in your car and you think everything is okay and you will be struck by a vehicle and have the same experience. At any moment, any one of us could unexpectedly meet the Lord, and the only thing that will matter at that point is how was I living 1 second prior. Like Luke 16, you read about the rich man who lifted up his eyes in torment, or Lazarus who lifted up his eyes to see angels carrying him to paradise. Each of us one day is going to meet one of those two alternatives. Number three, I want to make an observation about the Lord's suffering. Something occurred to me while I was lying in the hospital, and that is I got to thinking about the pain that I was enduring and how bad it was. And I remember thinking I would do anything to make it stop. It was so bad. And I got to thinking about what the Lord went through with the spikes being driven through his hand, about them piercing his side, about the things that were involved in the crucifixion. And I got to thinking about the fact that he could have stopped it, but he did not. I think about John 10:17. He said, therefore does my Father love me because I laid down my life. He said, no man taketh it from me, but I lay it down. Friends, when I think about that, it puts a different perspective on the crucifixion. Next, I want to make an observation about God's will. Since this accident, I have had people repeatedly say things to me like this. Well, Don, it happened for a reason. Or it was God's will. Or, you know, it was part of God's plan or something like that. Brethren, I don't believe that. If we are not careful, we get dangerously close to Calvinism and suggest that God causes everything that happens. The fact of the matter is, God has given us free will. He allows us to make choices. And he allows us to suffer the consequences of our actions. I don't believe God is out crashing people on four-wheelers. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe that when things happen, God can use those providentially in his will, and good things can come. But I don't believe God is out causing wrecks. Sometimes when a drunk driver will hit and kill a young child, a well-meaning person will say something like this, well, God must have wanted him in heaven. Friends, no wonder people get angry at God when they think things like that. That wasn't God's will. That was a violation of God's will. We need to be careful when we say things like that, and we need to understand that not everything that happens is God's will. Now, we can benefit from it. Good things can happen. God can use it. But to say, God killed that baby, God flipped my four-wheeler, that's a different discussion altogether. Point number two. I want to talk about some benefits of suffering, specifically mine and things that I went through. You know, skeptics and atheists will sometimes use suffering as a proof that God doesn't exist. I would argue that there are some great benefits and great blessings that come from suffering, and I'm going to share some of those with you. Number one, suffering teaches us to pray. Brethren, I have never had so many hard prayers offered as there was after this accident. I begged the Lord to let me walk again. Now, a skeptic might say, well, you're not walking, are you? I beg brethren to pray the same prayer. The skeptic, the atheist might say, well, where's your supposed God because you're not walking? I would answer that the Lord has answered my prayer. He simply said no. I don't know why. This is what I would say, though. I've been blessed immensely in many ways since this has happened. And I have to keep in mind that God sees the entire timeline of my life. When I look, I see a piece of the puzzle. I see a slice of time. But God sees it all. And I have to keep that in perspective. If you run into someone who doesn't believe in the power of prayer, tell them to talk to me because I believe in it now more than I ever did, more than I ever did prior to. I believed in it before, but my perspective is different now. Here's the next thing. Suffering makes me not love this world. Since this accident, I have said many times, this world is not my home. I'm just a passing through. I deal with pain on a daily basis. I have learned to manage pain. I see things differently now for people who deal with chronic pain. I never understood it before. You know, John 14 in verse 2, Jesus said, in my Father's house there are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. If I go to prepare a place, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Jesus said, I'm going to prepare a place and I'm going to take you there. He's talking about heaven. Brother Don McWhorter wrote before he passed away, woe to the man or woman whose life on this earth is so pleasant that he forgets about heaven. And I would say amen to that. Next, I would suggest as a benefit of suffering, suffering allows Christians to let their light shine. Matthew 5:16 says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. While I was in the hospital, we received approximately 2,800 cards. I don't mean emails. I don't mean Facebook posts. I mean paper cards. I know them because my dad counted them. He was so bored in the hospital, he counted the cards. When we got home, they kept coming. I guess when we got to probably over 4,000 cards, we just quit counting them. My dad had the idea that we hang them on the walls. We got to the point that our hospital room was just papered in cards. In fact, I found a picture that gave you a little representation of what it looked like. Our walls were just covered in these cards. A lot of the cards had gift cards in them. Many of them were Chick-fil-A gift cards. I joked that we will be eating Chick-fil-A till the Lord comes again. We had so many of them. As we started covering the walls, everyone who came in was in awe. The man in the mail room said he'd worked there for years. He'd never seen anything like it. Someone walked in and they asked me, are you somebody famous? And I said, no, I'm a Christian. I said, that's what brethren do. It made an impression on people who came in. In fact, it turned out I was in the hospital with Kenny Rogers. He was in there at the same time that I was, and I spent some time. Here's a picture I got with Kenny Rogers one day. Somebody said, Kenny Rogers didn't get as many cards as you did. And I said, Kenny Rogers is not a Christian. Well, we tried to make some efforts in that regard, but of course, Kenny passed not long ago and made an impression on me. Once you've met someone, super nice guy. The church where we were attending at the time, South Haven, started a GoFundMe account to raise money because we had some astronomical bills. We continue to and will for the rest of our lives because of my condition. So much money was raised that there was a man in South Haven who was not a member of the church, but he saw this. He was so curious, he wanted to check it out. When I got out of the hospital and went back to South Haven, I studied with that man and taught and baptized him. A fourth benefit of suffering is it keeps a proper, helps you to keep a proper perspective of your physical possessions. Brethren, in the months after the accident, I started thinking about all the things that I was going to have to give up. Many because I simply couldn't use them anymore. I was giving up my power tools. And what was I going to do with the skill saw now? I got to the point that as I was giving up these things, it was grieving me. Shortly before the accident, I had gone out and bought my dream pickup truck. I had bought a 2018. It was blue. I got the leather seats. I got the GPS. For the first time in my life, I got everything I wanted on it. I didn't have that many miles when I had the accident. And I got back from the hospital, and I tried to get into the truck, and I could not pull my body up into it. And so I got rid of the truck, and it pained me greatly because I love that truck. But you know, the whole experience made me realize that I shouldn't love things that much. You know, it made me think about the rich young ruler. What was his problem? His problem was he loved things, and maybe that accident helped me in that regard. You know, I remember that the rich young ruler walked away from Jesus because he loved his stuff, and then Jesus said to his disciples immediately after that, "I say to you, it is hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. I say again to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven." Matthew 19:23. Many otherwise faithful Christians will lose their souls because they like to take their money and pleasure themselves with things. And maybe this will help me in this way. Next, suffering brings out the best in people. After my accident, there were two firemen in South Haven, Mississippi, where we were living. They were not members of the church. But while I was in the hospital, when they learned about my accident, they started cutting my grass and caring for my yard for free. They were not members of the church, but they were just good people. They did this for free for the rest of the year and refused to take any money for it. When I got home to South Haven, typically Sherry and I on Sundays would go to Longhorn Steakhouse. We love Longhorns. The waiter knew us. The first time I rolled up in a wheelchair, he said, "What happened?" And I told him, and he cried. And when we got ready to leave that day, the waitress said my bill had been paid. And I said, "Who?" And she said, "The waiter. I've been given free haircuts." I could list all these things. These were non-Christians. That's not even to begin to talk about what the church has done. Since the day of my accident, my parents were there with me every single day for 3 months in the hospital. I watched my daddy, who at the time was 75 years old, pick up my broken body and dress me and help get me around. My wife has been there every single day. She has done unpleasant things, seen unpleasant things. The nurse in the hospital told me that many people over the years she has seen, when their spouse is involved in an accident like this, they leave them. They will say, "I didn't sign up for this," and they depart. And so I feel blessed. Many people drove hundreds of miles to visit me in the hospital and encourage me. You know, John 13:35, Jesus said, "By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, by the love that you have one for another." Next, I want to point out to you a benefit of suffering is that suffering humbles us. This entire experience has humbled me like you just don't know. Before the accident, I was physically very strong. I worked out 30 to 45 minutes every day. I never missed a day. I could drive 10 hours for a gospel meeting, and when I got there, I would go to the workout facility in the hotel and work out before I went to bed. I never missed a day. But now my body is weak. My muscles have faded away. I was financially well off. I had control of my life at work. I was the boss. When everything goes your way, it's easy to get full of yourself and feel self-sufficient. But an accident like this makes you realize how much you depend on God. There was a whole team of highly skilled doctors who could not do anything about my situation, and it makes you realize how much you depend on God. This accident has humbled me in ways that I've never been humbled, and in some ways that's good. 1 Peter 5 and verse 6, the Bible says, therefore humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you in due time. Number 7, suffering makes you sympathetic to other people. You may think that you sympathize with others, but until you've been there personally, you don't really know. But I tell you what, when you have hurt this way and you know what it's like, you want to be there for other people. You want to help other people. It changes your perspective. Romans 12:15 says to weep with those who weep. When I see people now who are handicapped and in chairs and are in pain and they tell me their back hurts, I don't think of it the same way that I used to think of it. It means something different to me. When I go and I see able-bodied people parked in the handicapped spots at Walmart and everywhere else, oh, it bothers me in a way that it didn't used to bother me. And I see it every single day. Here's the next thing. Suffering purifies us. Now, what do I mean when I say it purifies us? When I realized how close I came to dying, you know what it made me do? I started searching my life for any shortcomings that I might have had. Now, somebody might have said, well, Don, you're a Christian. You're a gospel preacher. But when you realize that you came that close to eternity, it makes you stop and think, is there anything that if I had died that I would have gone to hell? And the Bible teaches us in 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5, examine yourselves, whether you are in the faith, test yourselves. That doesn't mean whether you're in the faith, whether you're a Christian. He means whether you're walking in the faith. As a child of God, are you walking in the light? As a Christian, examine yourself to see if you're walking in the light. It's exactly what the Bible teaches. Psalm 119 and verse 67, David said that he said, I went astray before I was afflicted. Consider that. Four verses later, verse 71, he said, it is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I may learn your statutes. That is, suffering, he said, helped me. It caused me to examine myself. There are some benefits from it. Let me move on. I know time's getting away from me. Here is the third point. Where do I go from here? Where have I gone from here? It's been nearly 2 years. I'm paralyzed. I can't walk. The doctors say I will never walk again. I'm what they label as a T6 complete. From here down, I'm completely paralyzed. When they label you as a complete, that is, they don't think there's ever going to be any change. What do I do? I believe that every one of us makes a choice whether or not we're going to be happy. We can choose to be happy or we can choose to be miserable. I can remember people in the hospital. I'm a paraplegic. There were people in the hospital who were quadriplegics. You will see them blowing in a straw just to move their chair around, and yet they were happy and they were smiling. How do you explain that? I think we all make a choice to be happy or to be miserable. Now, how do we do that? In Philippians 4 and verse 11, Paul said, I have learned in whatsoever state I am therewith to be content. Now, he said he learned it. It didn't come easy. And I will tell you what, it hasn't been easy. It changes your perspective. Sherry and I have struggled, but we're learning. Secondly, don't forget that you're a Christian. I remember one day I was in the hospital. In fact, it was Father's Day. My daughter and my son-in-law came to visit. And when they left, it was just empty. You know the empty feeling you get when the kids leave and you're there alone? And I had that and I was in the hospital. I have an iPhone. The iPhone does this strange thing where it takes your pictures and it puts them together as a video and it puts them to music and it just sends it to you. On that day, I got a notification that I had a video from my phone, and I looked at it, and it was a video of a trip from the year before when my family was at Disney World together, and it showed me a picture where I was standing there with my family, and I had my arms wrapped around them. And I realized I would never be able to do that again. And it brought me low. maybe one of the lowest points I'd ever been. And I just broke into tears and I could barely control myself. But then I got to thinking to myself, I'm a Christian. And I thought, this is temporary. This world's not my home. It's going to be short-lived. It's not going to be that long, and I'm going to get a new body, and I'm going to walk again. In just a few years, everybody my age is going to be in a wheelchair. I mean, that's the way it happens. This body wears out. And I got to asking myself, how can I go on like this? And I thought, I can go on like this because I'm a Christian. And then I got to thinking about all the other people that were in the hospital who are not Christians. And the Shepherd Center is filled with people who are paraplegics and quadriplegics. That's what they do. And I thought, could you imagine going through life in that condition and you have no hope for anything after that and you die and you're lost? That's what it means to be miserable. And it made me think, I've got to teach the gospel. I thought, I've got to reach out to these people because I don't want other people to not have the hope that I have. Hold that thought. Here's the next point. Where have I gone from here? Brethren, we need to realize God did not put us on this earth to be happy. I know that sounds like a strange thing to say, but I want to read you this quote. This is from Jane McWhorter in her book, Let This Cup Pass. She said, we are here to prepare ourselves for life after death. It doesn't really matter whether we live 50 years or 100 years. Neither does it matter if those years are carefree or filled with sorrow. The only consideration of lasting importance is, where will we spend eternity? You see, the Lord didn't put us here to be happy. Why did He put us here? Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13 says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole duty of man. Life could be difficult for us. It might not be happy. It might be hard. But fearing God and keeping His commandments and preparing myself for life after this, that's what life is all about. Now here's the third point, and I'm going to wrap up with this. With the two previous points in mind, I want to be evangelistic. I wanted the people in the hospital to have the same hope that I have. And who knows, maybe this accident, this disability will open a door so that I can teach the gospel to some people I might not have had the opportunity to teach. In fact, when we got home, we had to have my house redone, my bathroom redone, so that I could function in my wheelchair. And we had four contractors who redid the house. Here's a picture of them right after we had baptized all four of them. While they were in the house, I studied with them. I got to all four of them to watch the videos that I had done. Why are there so many churches? We're going to talk about that in this meeting. Where do we go when we die? We're going to talk about that. And then I got them to sit down and have a Bible study with me, after which we baptized all four of them. Who knows what doors might be opened because of this? After this accident, I thought to myself, if I could trade all of my earthly possessions, my house, my cars, my money in the bank, everything that I have to walk again, I would do it in a second. I wouldn't have to think about it. If somebody said, give us everything you have and you can have the body back you had before, I would do it without batting my eyes. But here's one thing I would never trade, and that is my soul. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 26 says, for what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and yet lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? There's nothing more important to me than my soul, because it will last long after this body is gone. You know, life is short. My next birthday, I'll be 50 years old, half a century. It doesn't seem like it's been that long. It's gone quickly. It won't be that many more years, and I'm going to get a new body. And this little span of time I've spent in this body is nothing compared to what eternity will be. That's why I won't trade my soul. If you're here this morning and you're not prepared for eternity, You need to make those preparations. You may leave here today and your life may change, your life may end, and you may open your eyes and it's forever too late. To be prepared for eternity, you need to be a child of God. You need to have your sins forgiven. The way you do that is by obedience to the gospel. Hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. Maybe you say, I don't know what to do. I'd like to have a Bible study. We would be open to do that. I know that Wayne would do that. I know the elders here would do that. I'd even do that because it's the most important thing in your life right now. Maybe you're prepared and you're ready to become a Christian, to make that confession and be baptized today for the remission of your sins. We're ready to assist you. Maybe you're here as a member of the Lord's church, but you've been unfaithful, maybe publicly, maybe in your attendance. Maybe you've even let COVID cause you to stumble. Maybe you need to make that right today. This morning, you've got the opportunity. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, we invite you to come as together we stand and sing the invitation song.